Opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue Tuesday, May 28th. We will be taking the items that are posted on the agenda not in the same order in which they are posted. The public hearing will begin in a little while. We're going to do some work sessions first. And before we do work sessions, I'd like to announce some bills that we are not ready to work on today. House Bill 2390, we will carry over. We're waiting for an amendment. House Bill 2449, we will carry over. We are waiting for some clarification. There are a couple of bills posted on here for work session that, if there's time, I would like to open up the work session to enable the committee to discuss the amendments that have been posted, but we will not be moving them along today. For example, 2978, we might have time to discuss the amendments that we see so far. There will be another one, so we'll carry over 2978 in any case. And I expect on 2128, we might have an opportunity to discuss it, but we will not be voting on it today. So we're going to start with a work session on House Bill 2787A.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, House Bill 2787A adjusts language to clarify that only authorized insurers of wet marine and transportation insurance pay a tax on the underwriting profit, and that non-authorized or unauthorized insurers pay a tax equal to 0.75% of the gross receipts from the sale of those premiums. There is a -4 amendment, and this adds to statute record-keeping requirements for these producers that should facilitate easier tax collection for DCBS. It also provides provisions for when, for example, if a license is terminated or not renewed, how quickly that insurer has to report to the state. It provides DCBS rulemaking authority for these reporting requirements. And there is a minimal revenue impact and no expenditure impact on this bill.
Thank you. Committee, any discussion on 2787 or the amendment? Looks like we're ready for a motion.
Chair Nathanson, I move the -4 amendment be adopted into HB 2787A.
Representative Marsh moves the -A4 amendment adopted into House Bill 2787A. Any discussion on this motion regarding the amendment? Any objections? Motion passes.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2787A as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Marsh moves House Bill 2787A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? Motion passes. 2787. Who would like to carry this one? I'll be happy to then, since no one is jumping at that one. Is that all on this one? I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2787. Wow, we got one thing done. Let's try to get something else done. We'll begin our public hearing shortly. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2429.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2429 expands property tax exemptions to include machinery and equipment used to compress and bale harvested straw, hay, grass, or other plants for the purpose of storage or shipment. In the initial version of the bill, or the introduced version of the bill, it specifies for the purposes of this exemption that the property would be treated as tangible personal property. And so there are three subsequent amendments. And the first amendment removes the condition of personal property, or the specification of personal property, and specifies that the property must be farmer owned. The dash two removes the condition of personal property, but does not allow, or does not specify that the property must be farmer owned. And then the dash three kind of combines those. It does specify that the property must be farmer owned, and then it gives a very specific definition of farmer owned, resulting in a majority share owned by the farmer. And then so in looking at the revenue impact, we have spoken to the counties, and when this first takes effect, there would be approximately a $200,000 loss, and then in the second biennium and third biennium, it seems that there has been a growth of this type of property. There's more occurrences of these, and so you'd have some depreciation, and then you'd have some new property coming on the roll, and so then there would be a local property tax loss throughout the counties of about $400,000, and that's because then you're now incorporating 2 years instead of just the one.
Thank you. So, committee, we had some discussion quite a while ago. There was interest in concern that this might apply to entrepreneurial activity, a business that wasn't necessarily a farmer-owned business related to this, thus the amendments. I have looked at the amendments, and I think the dash one and dash three are the most appropriate given what the committee's conversation was, but now you've seen the revenue impact also. We do not have to move this bill today. It's not urgent. If you feel like you're ready to and ready to propose, prefer one amendment over another, three is the most clear in defining that it's farmer owned. Dash one would suffice, but the dash three is good also. If you're not clear about your preferences today, we can always carry this over. But let's have at least a minute or two of discussion from you. Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This, along with some other a number of other conversations that have been kind of brought up and then in a variety of ways over this session about equipment and consistency across county assessors, and that I do not feel strongly about moving it today. I continue to believe that this might be another thing that would be a good work group conversation between assessors and ag folks and kind of all of the participants in this, because this the public hearing item, it just feels like there's been a lot of conversation about this. And while consistency is important, I fear that our doing it this way isn't going to provide the consistency that maybe a broader conversation about specifically bolted down versus not, you know, kind of the stuff that there seems to kind of be agreement on, but maybe not really. So my preference would be to not move this.
Representative Finley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think, well, I appreciate your thought. I think this clears up some of the ambiguity that's there, and hopefully some of the disparate treatment amongst counties. And by a hard definition, and the farmer owned and the exemption process, I think that fixes a lot of the other issue. And the equipment has changed from the original concept, as you know, we heard, you know, the equipment has gone from handling 140-pound bales to handling 1,000-pound bales. So safety purposes and its mobility purposes have changed it. So I personally think that this, with a hard definition of a farmer owned and the exemption purposes, I think it's much better than it was before. And I think it will take the ambiguity out between counties and the process. So I'm comfortable with it.
That's a good question.
Let's do a quick question and answer.
Okay, just a question for Jamie. This farmer owned as a qualifier, do we use that anywhere else? And can you speak to how we assess whether something is farmer owned?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Marsh, members of the committee. I don't know if we have farmer owned anywhere else in statute or administrative rules. This was discussed during some of the farming equipment, and so I did specifically ask the counties when it came to this type of property, whether that was something that happened or if some of these were corporate owned. And I think that that there are larger and small farms. There are some farms that buy hay from other farms. There are some of these sort of presses that or hay balers that are sort of, as we know, going behind trucks and larger ones. Mm-hmm. But not the counties weren't able to specifically say whether all of them were farmer owned. We didn't have a distinction on that. So there's still, in terms of what's in statute, I can't say, but I also have some ambiguity on what's out there in the counties as well. But it's something that we've been looking into in terms of getting some clarity.
I think there is not sufficient clarity or interest in moving this one today. We're going to carry over House Bill 2449. Closing. 2429. Sorry, got the number. 2429. So we're carrying that over. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2900.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. This bill, House Bill 2900A, extends the sunset for property tax exemption on property that is used in food processing. This bill also allows the county governing body to make a current exemption as it stands inoperative. And so it does specify that companies or organizations that are currently receiving this exemption would continue to receive that exemption through the effective date. But in the case that the county or governing body decided to make it inoperative, then going forward, that would be the case. And
thank you. We have a few people signed up to testify. First, I'd like to hear from Brian Mogg, Chris Sarles, Craig Smith. We have some committee members who have another commitment. pretty soon. I'm hoping that you'll be able to keep your comments to about 3 minutes each. Will that work?
That'll work fine. Good morning, committee. Chair Nathanson. We are really happy to be here. My name is Craig Smith. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for Food Northwest. We're the regional trade association that represents the food industry in Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. And we're proud to be here this morning because we're the people that feed you, and we're happy to do that. The M&E tax deferral that we're talking about this morning was first enacted in 2005, and it was enacted at a time when the fruit and vegetable and food processing industry in the state was in a serious decline. Plant closures were common, and industry was really suffering. In fact, from 2000 to 2003, Oregon's food sector experienced a 15.3% decline in average annual employment, and it was a really tough time. Since this tax deferral has been enacted, it's been a part of a major plan to really do some good things with this industry. We have been, as an industry, the bright spot in Oregon's economy, adding local family wage jobs into the payroll. And even during the Great Recession, we were the only industry segment in the state that added jobs during the recession. And we're really proud of that. This tax deferral is an important piece of that process. It's not the only reason that we've grown, but it is a really important reason. Today, the food sector employs 32,000 Oregonians, and they earn $1.3 billion annually in wages. I'd also like to point out that this tax deferral is a very important part of our upgrading process and our strategy for decarbonizing our industry. Our energy use and our carbon reduction plan was adopted in 2015, prior to the date that we've really started talking about cap and trade or carbon taxes in the state. And we set a goal at that time of 25% reduction in energy use and a subsequent reduction of 25% in our carbon emissions. And I'm proud to say that that 10-year plan is right on track, and we plan to meet that goal by 2026. I also would like to point out a couple things that happened in this bill in the Economic Development Committee. We did support the local opt-out process that gives counties the opportunity to work with their local taxing entities and opt out of this program if they don't like it or they don't want to do it. And I would also say that we have a letter of support that's in the record from the Association of Oregon Counties supporting the bill as it is. And so we really thank you for being here. I'd like to introduce Brian Mogg and Chris Sarles, who are both business owners and operators in the state.
Thank you, Craig. Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Marsh and Finley, and fellow committee members, my name is Brian Mogg. I'm a third-generation Oregonian in the ag space, and I'm proud to call myself a native Oregonian. I'm proud of Oregon and love the opportunity and feel privileged to have operated a small business in the state for over 32 years. Currently, I'm the president and co-owner of Boardman Foods, located in the Port of Morrow's Processing Park in North Morrow County. We employ about 300 full-time equivalents in the processing and value-added of onions, peppers, and squash. The M&E deferral is crucial, I think, for the state of Oregon in staying competitive. If you look at a map, most of the processing plants are on the borders of either Washington or Idaho, and especially in the case of Idaho, we have a lot of competition for keeping the jobs and the assets in the state of Oregon. I think it's crucial for three reasons to maintain this exemption. I think if you look at the new processing plants, they're very capital intensive and they're very low margin. It takes a lot of money to build a plant and to put it in compliance with FSMA, the new Federal Safety Modernization Act, Food Safety Modernization Act. And because of the fact that it takes a lot of capital, it takes a while to start these plants up. It takes 2 or 3 years to kind of get them perfected and get the bugs out of them so that you can get real production. And so this deferral gives, I think, processing companies an opportunity to get to the point where the assets can create revenue that would support what's going on. I think the last thing that's most important is that value-added ag has the ability to multiply the effect. And this is something that Oregon can do. It's not an unproven venture. I mean, adding value to ag products that can be produced here and creates not only jobs at the processing plant, but there's a huge multiplier in the community. And I think that needs to be seriously considered. It's a proven sector. I think ag's really important, and I would hope that you could find your way to approve this deferral. Thank you. Chris?
And good morning. I'm Chris Sarles, and I'm with Oregon Fruit Products. We are an 85-year-old fruit processor here in Salem, Oregon. We were on our original site in West Salem from 1935 until 2017. And it is because of both the city, county, and state, the work that they've done with us, that we were able to move to a new facility here in Salem, which allowed us to retain jobs right here in this community and in this state. We process everything from local blueberries and cherries and blackberries and boysenberries, et cetera. And they're value-added products that end up going into and help support a lot of other industries, whether that's restaurants, whether that's the great brewery, winery business that we have here in the state. We are a part of that. And I think that the M&E exemption or deferral has allowed us to make some significant investments this last year. When we moved from our original site to this new site, we invested in lots of new equipment, and that allows us to do a couple of different things. One, as Brian referred to, the Food Safety Modernization Act is now getting stronger and stronger, and as a result, new equipment is required to provide that kind of level of safety. And then in addition, efficiencies that are gained in the process with that new equipment are also very, very important. So I think the last piece would be when you look at the flow through to all of the different jobs, both the people that we employ every day, 85 jobs, to the summertime, 300 jobs, these deferrals are allowing us to continue to make those investments and continue to grow. Thank you.
Can I make one more comment, please?
A very short one.
Yes. Just to put a little math to the situation, if we sell the products that we deal with at the farm gate, they're worth X. If we sell them value added, they're worth anywhere between 3 and 6X if we add value to them at the processing plant. That's how important this is to creating jobs and so forth. So,
thank you for adding that point. Appreciate it. Questions for this panel? A very quick one.
Okay, I can pass.
Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to hear from Wendy Johnson, and we will have someone testifying by phone. Paul Chalmers, please.
Hi, this is Paul.
If we add that.
Hello, Paul. This is Nancy Nathanson, chair of the House Revenue Committee. Can you hang on just a second while we hear from Wendy Johnson?
Yeah, you bet. I'm here until I'm done.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. My name is Wendy Johnson here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. I have some testimony online, and I'm wondering if
Mr. Chalmers, can you put your phone on mute? We're getting some extraneous sounds. Thank you.
My testimony is online, and it's more of some background information. The first slide online is just the big picture, and it's from the Department of Revenue's expenditure report. It shows what we're bringing in each year in property taxes. It's about $13 billion a biennium, so about $6.7 billion a year. And then in the revenue impact, it has what you have in total exemptions. In the 15-17 biennium, it was $9.8 billion in exemptions. And the 17-19, it's $10.4 billion in exemptions. So this is your big picture. This is a slide I presented to the Oregon Economic Development Association's conference, so they would understand the big picture. Of course, state property and federal property and personal property is exempted. But then that next chunk is the SIP program and E-zones and such. So it shows you the big economic development exemptions. The food processing is in the top five of the exemptions. And so I want you to see the big picture that this is a large exemption. It's $6.3 billion, and that was from the last biennium. It's now over $8 billion biennium, or million, excuse me, biennium. The next slide has the tax expenditure report, so it shows you the loss for the 1921 is $8.8 million, and then there's another $1.8 million in shift. So this is a savings to the food processors, but it's shifted to other taxpayers. So the local governments and schools still get that money. It's just shifted to another taxpayer. So when you add the 8.8 and the 1.8 together, you're looking at a $10.6 million benefit to the food processing industry with this exemption. And then you look in the who benefits column, it shows that it's 27 businesses. So 27 businesses are getting that 10.6 and 122 pieces of equipment. So this is a really large exemption for a very small group. So I want you to understand that big picture. It is an economic development benefit, and we recognize that. I handle the tax and economic development portfolio, so we get that. But when you look at the text of the bill and how this exemption has worked since 2005, if you produce X products, you get the exemption. There's no criteria. It's just because you produce the listed products, you get the exemption. And that's been our concern at the League, is that it's really not a true economic development if it's an automatic exemption. Second, in the House Committee on Economic Development and Trade, they added a new requirement that does allow a local opt-out, but it's only at the county level. So the county gets to decide for all the taxing districts if this exemption would go forward. That's a new element, and we support it to the degree that it gives some local decision-making, but many of these food processing businesses are in the incorporated area. They're in the city, and so this provision that was added does not give a city any control. And as the main economic development engine, we would prefer that if it's in the city, that the city would have that local control. So you see in my next slides why the League is taking this position. We have a municipal policy that's been around for over 10 years. Go back up to the previous one. Under the green there, it says for tax exemptions that to the extent that the legislature considers property tax exemptions, clear criteria defining the policy goals of the exemption and the rules for granting the exemption should be developed. And there was never any clear policy rules developed for this when it was passed in 2005. As you heard previously, there was a crisis in the industry, but now there's not criteria to continue getting this. It's just because you produce these products. And then secondly, our policy is that the exemption should only be granted at the option of local governments, and we don't have that local option presently. On the next slide, it shows that the alternative would be if the state would pay for it, then we would support it. And there are some economic development tools that the state pays for. And so if this is an important one for the state, we would ask that respectfully the legislature would consider paying it rather than taking it out of our revenues. I understand there's a short amount of time. May I continue? Or do you need me to wrap up?
How much longer do you need?
Just another minute or two.
A minute.
So infrastructure is our big issue right now. And as you know, local revenues are decreasing, and this takes property taxes as our main base. If we want more industry to grow, we need to be able to pay for water, transportation, and such. And so we're at a catch-22. How do we help this type of industry, but at the same time grow more? And so we would like to be able to add criteria that allow us to give this exemption to businesses that truly need it. But if a business is not needing it, doesn't meet criteria that we would develop, we would prefer to use it on other items or other industries or infrastructure to continue growing. So for those reasons, we'd ask that you would amend the bill before moving it along. Thank you.
For your testimony. Now, Mr. Chalmers, you're still with us? Mr. Chalmers, you can have 3 minutes now to join us.
Well, thank you very much, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Finley, Vice Chair Marsh, members of the committee. My name is Paul Chalmers. I'm the Director of Assessment and Taxation for Umatilla County. I've been in this capacity since 1995. I've worked for the county since the inception of Measure 5 back in 1990, and certainly through the passage of Measure 47/50. For the testimony, I'd like to provide opening comment of saying we love our ag folks here in Eastern Oregon, by all means. The problem that we run into is this is another proverbial chink in the armor, if you will. And that being said, what I'm talking about is since the passage of Measure 5 and levy-based system, we are dealing with permanent rates, as you well know, for all taxing authorities. I'm also on the Pendleton City Council and chairman of the Pendleton Development Commission. So we have to look really hard at our revenue capacities to provide local services for local jurisdictions. And this is a comment that I hear time and time again as Director of Assessment and Taxation. Umatilla County provides about $27 million of food processing equipment exemption every year. This last year, specifically, again, we have no qualms about providing support for our ag folks, because in Umatilla County, ag is the base for all of our economic activity. I think fundamentally, part of the issues that we have from an administration standpoint is these pieces of equipment have to be authorized by the Department of Agriculture. And we've had just one specific issue where verification of that piece of ag through Department of Ag was a little tough, because it was a sale of property, and in the midst of that sale of property, they received, or were going to receive until we validated that they shouldn't receive, that benefit for purchase of that property. It was a pre-existing piece of farm or food processing equipment, and indeed should not. So enforcement is a little bit of a concern from an administrative standpoint. And so we just don't have the staffing capacities to do that all the time. We were fortunate to find this somewhat in check and balances that we perform for certain exemptions. And fundamentally, I guess what I'm suggesting, going back to my chink in the armor comment, is isn't there some capacity to offer income tax credits rather than property tax relief? And I guess this holds true for any exemption that the legislature should consider. And I say that selfishly from a municipality standpoint, where we're dealing with permanent rates that cannot be adjusted. It just affects capacity to deliver local services for local jurisdictions who are frozen in time, if you will, with permanent rates that cannot be adjusted under the current property tax system.
Thank you. Committee, any quick questions for this panel? Yes, Representative Rushke.
Mine's more a comment, and it goes off to what Mr. Chalmers said, is at the state level, we want more jobs, because more jobs means more income tax, which comes into the general fund. But in order to do that, we're being asked to give property tax exemptions and relief, which hurt counties and cities. And so I, you know, there's this interplay between we want more jobs, we want more income tax. Good, that's good for our economy, but what's the price we're paying, and do we pay it? It doesn't look like it. Looks like we have the counties and cities pay it. So we, you know, as we discuss this, this seems to come through this committee a lot, is how do we figure that out if we're going to give an exemption that it's fair across all government levels, and we're not just dictating you pay the price, we get the gain.
Thank you. Representative Finley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for the league. The 27 companies that receive this tax advantage, do you know how many employees are employed by those companies? I'm trying to gauge the rippling effects of that. I mean, this is a highly competitive and highly expensive business, and for manufacturers to ramp up and update their equipment is very expensive for them, but it also secures a tremendous number of jobs, both directly and indirectly. So, do you have any idea what the impact of that is?
Representative Finley, I think we heard from previous testimony that 32,000 people are employed by the industry, so, and I think these 20-something are the major ones. So to represent Reschke's, yes, there's that correlation to jobs, but the negative on the revenue balance is on the local government side.
Representative Finley, I have asked Legislative Revenue Office to find some data for us. And
thank you.
Send it to us by email.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? Thank you, Mr. Chalmers.
Thank you.
And Ms. Johnson. Next, Susan Morgan.
I don't know what's going on in Umatilla, but the Grunions are really there.
Good morning, evening, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Finley, and Vice Chair Marsh. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Susan Morgan. I do revenue policy for the Association of Oregon Counties. The Association of Oregon Counties represents all 36 Oregon counties. We were established in 1906 and have been providing a forum for information sharing since that time. AOC supports HB 2900A. AOC supported the exemption when it was created in 2005 and when it was extended in 2011 and 2013. This is an important tool for counties to have in their economic development toolbox. Many of Oregon's counties rely on natural resource-based industries to provide social and economic stability for our citizens. And as you've had a discussion in this committee, natural resource jobs for rural counties are the base of the counties. They are most often the best paying jobs that have full benefits associated with them, healthcare, retirement, and all of the other social programs that are so important. The agricultural sector is a significant economic driver in rural counties across the diversity of this state. The ability to process crops that are produced in the region ensures stable markets for growers and creates and retains jobs on farms and in processing facilities. House Bill 2900A extends the sunset for the property tax exemption on qualified real property, machinery, and equipment, and it is counties appreciate that the bill gives individual counties control over granting the tax exemption so that local conditions can be considered. And I would ask you, representatives, to consider, and this is a conversation I know you've been having on other committees, that the diversity of Oregon from an economic perspective is huge. These jobs in the rural counties that they exist in are hugely important jobs, and they are jobs that help strengthen the social and economic fiber of the regions that they exist in. So if you were to take a couple of thousand jobs out of the job base in Umatilla County and the counties that have these large food processing facilities, there would be a huge economic result from that. This would weaken the structure of the communities. There would be fewer people that would be involved in community activities, and the ratio between the people that contribute to the economic and social stability and those that need to be supported with all of the social service programs changes that much more. And we've seen that over and over and over again in rural Oregon. So, representatives, I urge your support of this bill. I think it's an important piece in continuing the ability of rural counties to continue to function. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Finley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a quick question. And one thing I've learned in this session, which is new to me, a groovy new word, is trade exposed. A good number of the agriculture food processors are trade exposed. They're along the border where the competition across does not have this. Do you have any idea what percent that is? Because, you know, throughout the Columbia River and along the Snake River, that would be huge to figure that one out.
I think a good job for the legislative revenue folks to try to figure that one out. And also, I might add, if I might, Chair Nathanson, that the agricultural sector and the lumber producing sector, the timber product sector, sell into commodity markets. So these folks don't get to set the price that they sell their commodities for. They simply sell them at the price that the market sets. And so the only room that you have to continue to be innovative and efficient is to change the way that you do the process that you're doing. And so adding value to the products by manufacturing them into other things that they can sell for a higher price is a way that the system can innovate to mitigate for the fact of these commodity markets and also the stress that borders and different revenue policies across states impact the industry.
Thank you for your testimony. Committee, we have heard a couple of things this morning that I hope Legislative Revenue Office will be able to respond. I heard another one in a conversation with one of the advocates. There is concern that Oregon Department of Agriculture is not providing certain data that would be useful, and I would like Legislative Revenue Office to follow up on this question. And finally, there had been a suggestion raised in testimony that there might be an amendment that would be desired by some parties. I don't know if anyone is pursuing an amendment. I am not aware of one, but I would appreciate it if you could find out if there's an amendment idea floating around out there since it came up in testimony. That coming. Yes.
Thank you. One of the questions to follow up on something I think that LRO has already been tasked with is the question about how many folks claim this versus how many processors there are. I would find that pretty relevant as well. Thank you.
Thank you for the question. Representative Marsh.
And I would just add on, if there's any thoughts, I tried to pursue this when the bill was in economic development, because I think that the concept of value added is really an important piece of this. But there's nothing in the bill that requires that the processor be using a local product or any way to validate the fact that there's a value added component there. So if there's any thinking from LRO as you look at this about a way to actually document value added as an outcome of this, that would be great.
Thank you. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2900A. Committee, there were a couple of other bills on our agenda. It looks like a couple of you are eager to leave. So let me just say that, let's see, we've already carried over House Bill 2390. 2128, I thought we might be able to discuss a little bit, but there will not be time for that. We'll carry over 2128. And another one that we have not had time to discuss this morning is 2978. There are amendments posted. Does anyone have questions at this time, or shall we just wait until we discuss this at our next meeting? Next meeting?
Next meeting.
Okay. We're carrying that one over also, 2978. Did I announce action on all of them? We've completed our agenda. We're adjourned. Thank you.